This week on the Country Music Media Podcast.
Yeah, like, it's not going to be a big part of the story, but you still really want to get, you know, some
right.
Yeah, Billy Joel was great. That was very surreal because at that point I was visiting my parents in Cleveland. So I was just like in my childhood bedroom, like talking to Billy Joel on the phone. And he was great too. He had a lot of really funny quotes that I wish I could have used, but I love that they're like real life friends.
Garth Brooks rarely talks politics, but ahead of the Kennedy Center honors in Washington, D.C., he at least talked politicians. Friend of the show and former Chet Flippo Award for Country Music Journalism Excellence winner, Emily Yar was there and her tape recorder was spinning with a few pages of questions to see if she could dig a little deeper into the issues. With Garth, it's kind of complicated. Detractors say he's too much of a people pleaser, but when you meet him and talk to him, man, it's just hard to criticize him as insincere. I'm Billy Dukes, and if Garth Brooks is bluffing us, then no one has ever done it better. But I've never got to spend an hour with him, and I've never worked behind the scenes with his team to arrange a high-visibility profile ahead of a TV event that promises millions of viewers. Almost lost in the piece, which I've linked to at the countrymusicmedia.com website, is Emily's rare side interviews. Two absolute superstars of their genre, men who are very hard gets, agreed to 15 to 30 minutes with her, something that reveals another truth about real journalism. Find Emily, who writes for the Washington Post, on Twitter at Emily Yar, and me at Billy Dukes to continue the conversation. She had some really keen observations about American Idol and The Voice recently as well, and we'll get into how both of those shows are changing, perhaps for the better. If you're new, I recommend my interview with Dolly Parton profiler Emily J. Lordy or John Freeman's in my conversation about our differing Carly Pierce profiles. Click follow to never miss an episode, then rate and review, but most importantly, share this podcast with a friend. On Mondays, it's interviews. On Thursdays, it's news and commentary. So what's Garth Brooks really like? And is he as wholesome as he seems on TV? Let's find out together during episode 64 of the Country Music Media Podcast.
Hey, Billy.
Emily, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Welcome back to the podcast. I appreciate you coming back on for a second time.
Definitely. Thank you so much for having me.
We're talking about Garth Brooks, and the profile is called Everyone Wants Garth Brooks on Their Side. He just wants everyone to get along. And I asked you kind of a dumb question in the email about why this profile now. And I think it maybe illustrates a little bit something that I forget is that the Washington Post is still a local newspaper in Washington. Like, we think of it as this national newspaper, but you have very much a local constituency and a clientele to serve.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely cover national, international news. We also cover, lots of things in DC, and the Kennedy Center Honors are one of the biggest events in DC all year. Typically when it's not a pandemic, it's a big red carpet. It's very formal. There's an after party and everything. So that was the reason for the timing, because Garth Brooks got a Kennedy Center honor this year.
So, I mean, like on par maybe with the CMAs?
Yeah, I think, right, if that's like the biggest event in Nashville, I would say it's probably very, very similar in DC. I've been a couple times, and it's very cool to go because afterwards there's this big dinner. You just see celebrities walking around everywhere, like from every walk of life. And it's a pretty surreal event in normal times.
The focus of this kind of right off the bat was the political moment he had in January at President Joe Biden's inauguration. So you got to ask Garth Brooks about politics, and not many people kind of get that green light right off the top. What were you kind of hoping to find out from him heading into the interview or series of interviews that you did?
So I was really curious about the inauguration moment, because you're right, he doesn't really talk about politics that much, if ever. And so the timing just kind of worked out I interviewed him. I went down to Nashville in April. And so it was just a few months after inauguration. He hadn't really talked about it anywhere else. And I was curious because, I mean, inauguration was just such a strange time. It was, you know, at the Capitol 3 weeks after a violent insurrection happened there. And the mood was just seemed so intense just watching it. And I couldn't imagine what that was like for the politicians there and the performers there. So I wanted to ask him about that. But also, I mean, if you remember that moment, when he kind of went around hugging all the former presidents, that was kind of the one moment of levity, like during the ceremony, and you could hear people laughing in the clip. So I was just so curious to ask him like what was going through his mind at that moment. And I'm really glad I got him.
He has a great quote. He says, "Then I hear this voice go, 'Hell, you love everybody. I look over and there are the Bushes, now 41, Jiminy Christmas. I worship that man. I worship his family. So I go hug them.'" My first thought was, did you have to Google how to spell Jiminy Christmas? Because it's a little bit of an older phrase. I don't know if anybody's saying that nowadays.
I literally had to Google it. Yes. Like I knew what he was saying, but I was like, how do you spell Jiminy? So I just wanted to make sure I got it.
You know, people were so quick to politicize that moment, but I think in a lot of ways, Garth is like most people, where like, I think the majority of people aren't far left and far right. Like you do find a reason to love both sides, and people want them to be far left and far right. Is he that honest kind of right down the middle, or did you try to, did you get a sense that he was trying to play both sides a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's someone that when he does talk about politics, kind of like, yeah, I said in the story, like he does not want to offend anyone. He doesn't want to upset anyone. And that's what I think is so interesting about him, is that he has been kind of just this figure of unity for so long, where Democrats love him, Republicans love him. I don't think he wants to give any indication, really one way or the other, that could change people's minds about him. And I think because of that, people sometimes project what they believe onto him. Yeah, he didn't really say anything one way or another. He just kind of, yeah, kept emphasizing how much like he loved everybody. And that's why he went around and hugged every president, regardless of party.
How did you prepare for this profile?
It was hard because just Garth Brooks, as you know, has been so famous for so long. There have been a million things written about him. So when I'm going to a celebrity profile like this, I want to do something that's going to stand out and make it, and you know, so it's a story that people haven't felt like they've read a million times. So for this, some people avoid reading what other people have written about an artist. I kind of read everything. Like I, you know, read recent profiles. I go into Nexus. I spend so much time on Nexus, like way back, and read some of the first things that are written about him. I also, in a normal time, I would have gone to a Garth Brooks concert, probably for this story. It's been this year. So I watched a lot of concert videos. Like I've seen him a couple times, but I just watched some old YouTube videos. I watched his documentary. I don't know if you've seen it, The Road I'm On, and it's on Netflix now. And it was fascinating. Like that is just kind of a like chronological biography of his life. So it was just like, and a lot of listening to his music. I listened to a podcast about Chris Gaines. I really just like threw myself into the Garth Brooks world for about a month at least there.
And I saw on Twitter, you kind of got deep into the sound scan. The invent of SoundScan and how that affected his career. And a lot of things you talked about, I don't think really ended up making the final profile in any real significant ways. Is it a challenging to kind of cut those, knowing you did sort of all that research and work and you don't get to use certain parts in the piece, if in the interview?
It is so hard because there are, you know, space constraints like with a newspaper. I definitely went over the word limit I was originally told to stick to, but there was just so much. And so, yeah, things that I would have loved to expand on more, like about how he took 14 years off to raise his family, about SoundScan, which was such a critical element of him, how he became so popular so quickly. They were kind of, yeah, just reduced to a sentence or two. So, you know, part of me is so mad. So I'm like, I wish I could have had a whole section devoted to that.
Are you humble in that sense when an editor has to really chop you down from 3,000 words to 1,500 words or whatever it ended up being? Can you kind of take that pretty well, or do you get ticked off about it?
I am usually. Sometimes there's things I want to cut. And I think it's helpful that usually I'm like, yeah, you know what? Like, that's fine. But so when I actually like put up a fight, like people take me seriously. They're like, okay, like you probably shouldn't. At this, but it is so hard sometimes to have like a great quote or just like an anecdote. And now I've been doing this for so long that I can kind of recognize, I'm like, okay, this doesn't really need to be here, but I really want it to be in here. So yeah, the story definitely had a lot of moments like that.
I'm sometimes the worst at being edited. Like I know when I'm trying to shoehorn something in, but I still get really salty when someone tries to cut something that I spent a lot of time. Like I'm just not that humble. I don't know why.
It's hard. I think it just takes, you're like, part of it's just with time. Like I used to get a lot more upset about it. And then you kind of start to recognize things that like probably don't need to be there. But sometimes, especially like in a profile, it's hard because you have to balance, you know, the person you're interviewing, but then you've also spent all this time interviewing like secondary sources, which for celebrities are oftentimes other famous people. I'm like, oh, I really want to keep as much in there as possible, but it's just, it's so much. Like, I know you have to cut something.
It's Emily Yar from the Washington Post talking about her Garth Brooks profile. And take me through the day. You met in Nashville. Did you go to a number of locations? How much time did you have with them? Were there any sort of constraints or rules set up ahead of time?
I think the only thing that made it a little bit more difficult was just it was during the pandemic. And this was the first in-person interview I had done since everything shut down. So that was most of the logistics. Like I had to get 2 COVID tests before I met with him. And yeah, so we got an hour and we met. I went to his studio on Music Row. It was on the 3rd floor. And it was kind of funny because at the beginning, his manager, you know, like met me in the parking lot, and they were like so COVID conscious, you know, people wearing masks, like there weren't too many people. It was really only me and him in the room. But he was basically like, oh yeah, I take the elevator, you know, up to the 3rd floor. I forget which one it was, but like, and Garth will like, I'll bring him up in a minute. But I think some wires got crossed somewhere because I, like, as instructed, like went up to that floor and the elevator doors open and Garth Brooks was just sitting there. We kind of like stared at each other for a couple seconds. I was like, oh, hello. So we just got started right after that. And then the manager came up and was like, oh, okay, so you two have already met, and then left immediately. So it was just literally, yeah, me and Garth Brooks like in the room together. But he's so nice. It's like, you can't even be socially awkward around him because he was just immediately so friendly.
He's not only nice, like he has like a really well thought answer for everything, and he doesn't ramble. Like he answers all of the questions so well and so absolutely, and you never really get the feeling that he's dodging a question, although of course he is in sort of his own way. He just does it much better than everybody else does.
He really did. Yeah, there were, you know, he answered everything I asked. He also like asked a lot about me. At one point, Trisha came in the room and like we were all chatting. So yeah, just, he is one of those celebrities. And I think Trisha is too, that they just instantly make you feel comfortable and just like, it's more of a conversation. So it flew by, like it went really quickly. And yeah, you're right. I think even though there's definitely things he probably didn't want to talk about, he's just so good at answering things. Like you probably, at first you like don't even notice.
Did you have any sort of relationship with him ahead of time? Had you met him or talked to him, or were you a fan growing up? Kind of how would you describe your Garth relationship?
So weirdly, I had actually talked to him before this interview twice in the last year or so, which is so strange because I had never even like come close to meeting him or talking to him before that. But the last event actually I covered before everything shut down. And we talked about this during the interview, but it was the Gershwin Prize. And that was also here in DC. And it's an award given to a very prolific songwriter. And so he was being honored. This was last March. And it was an incredible show. I mean, it was the last concert I went to, you know, like Chris Stapleton, Keith Urban, you know, performing songs that he performed for an hour. So I actually very briefly talked to him on the red carpet there. And then in November, when he had an album coming out, I talked to him for like maybe 20 minutes for a quick phone interview just about the album. So yeah, it's kind of weird that I went my entire life / career without ever talking to him. And then I've talked to him like 3 times in the last like 15 months.
He's surprisingly accessible for an artist of his magnitude.
Well, that was the other thing was, I think I had actually then seen him pretty recently before. Were you at that CRS where he performed like that acoustic set just for radio programmers?
Yes.
Yeah, I just couldn't believe it. Like we were all in that like conference room where there had been like panels and, you know, things throughout the day. And then all of a sudden Garth Brooks just showed up. I think it was like pretty late at night, maybe like 9 or 10. And he just started playing. And it was just such a rare thing to see. And it was one of those moments of like, oh, like Nashville superstars are like very different than I think superstars in other genres.
Well, Garth is even like rare to that degree where he does things like that. Like that is even like the rarest of the rare, and it seems so organic, but he kind of, to like some of his detractors, he kind of, they'll say like it's phony or like he's putting on a show. I've never sensed an on-off switch, so to speak, with him. I'm sure it's there to an extent, but like I don't know where the boundary lies for him.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to have that when you are that famous, but it was something I asked other artists that I talked to for the story about him. And I remember Ashley McBride, I can't remember if I use this exact quote in the story, that she basically, yeah, was saying that he's just, he's so nice. And people sometimes probably do think he's like putting that on or it's an act, but she's like, it's really not, like, that is what he's like. So yeah, everyone swears by that. Again, I'm sure he definitely has times where that is not him. But he does a really good job of seeming, yeah, like extremely personable all the time.
You mentioned some of your other sources for the article. You got a Dwight Yoakam interview, which is like rarer than rare. Where did that come from? Like, how did you get Dwight Yoakam on the phone?
I was trying to think of people that, you know, had a special connection to Garth or something really significant. And he had mentioned during our interview that Dwight Yoakam was one of the performers that he always really admired on stage. And so, and sometimes you can get access if you mention like, oh, like this person like specifically mentioned, you know, you in an interview, like that helps. Sooner, like the publicist or whoever knows that you're not just like randomly reaching out. So yeah, just like through his publicist. That was a more last minute one, I think. I think it took a little while to coordinate, but then it happened. Yeah, I think he was the last person I talked to for the story, but yeah, he was great. That was someone who I think maybe like one or two quotes in the story, and, you know, we talked for half an hour and I would love to use so much more, but that was a good one.
Was he late? I bet Dwight Yoakam was late for his interview.
Was he late? I can't remember. There was something that happened where it did end up being later than I thought it was.
Yeah.
I didn't know if that was a thing. I'm like, I kind of forgot about that. I mean, it worked out fine because like I was, you know, around, but yeah, and he was great. Like we talked for so long. It's really funny.
I mean, not to pass right over Billy Joel, but did you get 30 minutes with him as well?
No, I had maybe talked to him for like 15 minutes, and I knew and that's kind of all I asked when I reached out. I was like 10 or 15 minutes would be great. Cause you know, again, like it's not going to be a big part of the story, but you still really want to get, you know,
some. Right.
Yeah. Billy Joel was great. That was very surreal because at that point I was, visiting, my parents in Cleveland. So I was just like in my childhood bedroom, like talking to Billy Joel on the phone. And he was great too. He had a lot of really fun quotes I wish I could have used, but I love that they're like real life friends. That was fun.
You're kind of labeled as a style reporter at the Washington Post masthead, but you do so much more than that. You have kind of a surreal job where you get to talk to these artists and then kind of do pretty thoughtful pieces on reality television, like The Voice, American Idol. You had a couple of really pretty perceptive pieces recently. Are you big fans of those shows? Are you a reality television germ, so to speak?
I don't think I would qualify myself as a fan of them, more that just like I can't stop watching because it has been so long, because they do I feel like that sometimes does actually make me qualified to cover it even more than other people, because something will happen and I will get like so worked up about it and then I'll write about it and it turns out a lot of other people feel the same way. But I think for American Idol, when I first started the Post in 2008, I worked for our TV columnist. I was her assistant and she recapped it every week. And so I think that kind of just stuck with me because it was really fun to write about. And also they're such a passionate audience. And some people, even people I work with, are like, didn't realize American Idol was still on the air, but writing about American Idol, I think the finale story I did, it was like one of the most read stories on our website all day. Like people still really, really care about these shows.
It was a pretty astute observation about why Chase Beckham was able to kind of take that win. He just leaned into country a little bit more and that got him the W. That, I mean, that country fan base, they vote consistently year after year.
They really do. This is something I've written about a lot because it feels so obvious to me, but again, it seems like something people need to be reminded about when people do make snarky comments of, you know, like, oh, American Idol, like that show's still on, or like, oh, those people like don't do anything afterwards. And it's really not true, especially in the country genre. I mean, Gabby Barrett was like literally an idol three seasons ago, maybe 3 years ago at this point. And I mean, she's one of the biggest rising stars in the format. And so, yeah, I just thought it was really interesting that the singer who had been doing well all season, Chase Beckham, as soon as he like really leaned into the country songs, suddenly he was like the front runner all of a sudden. Yeah, but ended up winning.
Yeah, and got to give him credit. That song 23, I think it's been number one on the sales charts for 2, if not 3 weeks now. And that's a good song. Like it's a really self-assured vocal performance, obviously a pretty personal lyric. Like there's some weight behind what he does as an artist. I don't know if he's going to be a country star because that's always too tough, but he could have like a Philip type career. Easy.
Yeah. I mean, that song is great. I think when I first saw it go number one on iTunes and I listened to it and I don't watch every episode, but I was like, oh, I have to go back and see this. So yeah, I could really see him. I think he's already said he's moving to Nashville. I could really see him having a career there. And even if he doesn't become like an actual star, I think he has a big built-in audience from the show, and yeah, could definitely keep growing it.
It's Emily Yar from the Washington Post on the Country Music Media Podcast. And you can find her on Twitter at Emily Yar, Y-A-H-R. And you did a great piece on the Voice finale and the winner, Cam Anthony, 19 years old. He was part of Team Blake. And what really separates him maybe from some previous winners is he wasn't an amateur in the way we're used to seeing amateurs on that show. Like, he definitely had a background that was different but strong heading into the show. What did Cam Anthony bring that was different than some of the other contestants?
I think that he just seemed so genuine. And I think he kind of reminded me more of the old school days of Idol, where it really was, young, like kind of amateur singers. And like you said, I mean, he had a career before, but you know, he was discovered in a viral YouTube video and he was 12, and then he had a record deal. It didn't work out. So it wasn't like he'd have this like big career and then this was like his second chance. Like, he genuinely, you know, still really wanted to make this dream happen. So I think that really connected with audiences. And also he just chose the perfect songs. I think that's something that's really, really hard for contestants on these shows to do, because you are kind of limited into whatever you're allowed to sing on TV. But Cam Anthony just picked like the perfect songs for his voice and just knocked every single one out of the park. And sometimes it's really hard to tell who's going to win on those shows. But in this case, just every week, the coaches were just like, we don't even know what to say to you anymore. Like, you're just that good. And it really translated to the viewers too.
Blake said, I've never had more people asking me about an artist on my team. You could be the first superstar that we launch off the show. I still don't know if the show is set up to deliver a radio star in any point. I mean, I don't know if the record label, but I don't know if that matters. That may matter less than ever in 2021.
Yeah, I don't think it will. And The Voice has gotten probably more criticism than any show for not really being able to set their winners on a good path. And I've interviewed some people about this too, because they also have, you know, they have a big country contingent. I remember Sundance Head, I actually talked to him at CRS a few years ago, and mm-hmm. he was really disappointed with how, with what happened after the show. The record labels, I don't think, are set up to really support artists coming off these shows. But you're right, like, with the audiences they have and with all the streaming opportunities available to them and everything else, like, I think you can still like make a pretty decent career out of your time on one of these shows.
Yeah, Craig Wayne Boyd, another one who was kind of ticked off about it. And the problem is, like, for a while, the show was tied with Republic Records, and there are no Republic Records like Nashville country reps that already have relationships with the country stations. So I could tell right after Sundance Head won that, his song was dead on arrival, because there was no relationships. And in radio, and this might not be the same with like pop music, but like, if you don't have those relationships formed, you don't really have a chance. It's like trying to swim upstream, and the loser is the artist in that case.
And I think I didn't even really know until the last few years that when they say that if you win, you get a record deal, you get the chance for a record deal. Like, it's really not anything certain. Like, there have been plenty of labels that have passed, you know, on artists. And I think, I'm trying to think of like the biggest success stories, I guess, like Danielle Bradbury, Cassidy Pope. I think the most valuable thing the show can give you is just exposure and connections. And, they've been able to kind of do a decent amount with that.
Yeah, I mean, the most successful shows from The Voice are probably not the winners. Was it Nicole Galyon or Natalie Hemby that was on the show?
Oh yeah, Nicole Galyon was on.
Nicole Galyon was on. Obviously, Morgan Wallen was on, but he got kicked off even before the finals. Danielle Bradbury won, Cassidy Pope won, and there was someone else. Oh, Ray Lynn, you know, she got kicked off really early, and she's had a pretty good career, I think you could say at this point. A few hits, but she's damn near a decade we've been talking about Ray Lynn.
Yeah, she was Team Blake. I think he really tried to help her out and you know, he gave her a lot of opportunities and tried to make it happen, and it worked out pretty well. I think the Swan Brothers, they were like kind of an earlier season.
They had a top 20 hit and maybe another one, if I'm not mistaken. And they're on the new Blake Shelton album. So he takes care of his team.
That is one thing I've heard from country singers I've interviewed, yeah, who are Team Blake. They say that he genuinely does keep in touch and reach out, which I think is not the case for all these celebrity coaches on those shows.
A few more minutes with Emily Yar. Are you comfortable going back inside and seeing concerts now?
Well, I bought tickets to 3 concerts in the last week. I don't know if I will. I told my friends, the caveat is like, I may not be okay with this, but I really, really want to go. So we'll see. I just bought tickets to, well, actually the one outdoor show is the Warren Treaty, because I thought they were great on the ACMs. They're coming to Wolf Trap, which is an outdoor venue here. And then I bought tickets for Ashley McBride, Brandi Clark. And then I still have tickets from last year to Celine Dion. So I could see going to maybe some of the smaller country shows. I don't know if I'll be ready for like a big arena, like Celine Dion show in September.
By September, I may be. Right now, and it's not logical. It's just like, I can't, like, for instance, we just had some family stop by 5 minutes before we hopped on the phone, picked up my kids and went and did something. Like, it was weird hugging a family member, even though, like, knowing we're both vaccinated, like, it just, it's a weird sort of readjusting anxiety that for me has been worse than the anxiety of 2020. Like, that isolation, I did that well. I crushed that shit. Getting back at it, that's been a hard thing for me.
Yeah, it's really weird, you know, even like being fully vaccinated and people are like, oh yeah, you can like go indoors without your mask. You can like do all these things. Like, I mean, I guess, but it's really hard to wrap my mind around that. And it's still, yeah, even just like getting in the car with a friend, I feel like I'm doing something wrong. Like, we're not wearing masks, the windows aren't down, but so I don't know. Concerts will be interesting. I think it helps. The first one I'm going to is outdoors, but yeah, see if I make it to the Ashley McBride show in August. I really, really want to.
You're going to ditch your friends, I can tell. You can find her at the Washington Post. Everyone wants Garth Brooks on their side. He just wants everyone to get along. I think you get a free few reads on the Washington Post before they try to make you pay and subscribe, which I encourage you to do, but you do get free ones.
Exactly. It's a really great deal. Got to subscribe. Highly recommend that.
At Emily Yar on Twitter. Thanks so much for coming back on the podcast today. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Big thanks to Emily Yar today. You can find her on Twitter at Emily Yar. That's Y-A-H-R. Find her articles at the Washington Post and look for her coverage of pop culture, entertainment, and style. She's a pro. I'm at Billy Dukes on Twitter and at Serious Journalist on Instagram. Links to everything we talked about today is at the Country Media Podcast website, countrymediapodcast.com. Thursday, it's news and commentary, including why you see top 10 of 2021 lists starting to pop up in April, May, and June. What is the number one song of 2021 anyways? Let's find out together during episode 64 of the Country Music Media Podcast.